Good morning. Larry Henning on behalf of Carol Clemmer, 13274. What 888 Association did in the prior litigation, the 05 case, is a kind of a shell game. They came forward and said, we're going to settle and dismiss the lawsuit. And they did dismiss the lawsuit. That's in the record. It's transcript page 190, lines 21 through 24. It was raised in Clemmer's response to the motion for summary judgment.
Excuse me, counsel. I'm sorry to interrupt, but this is being recorded, and so if you would stay with the microphone, I think would help.
Okay, thanks. Very well. And it's an indisputable fact that's subject to judicial notice. They also made an assignment but didn't disclose that assignment. That assignment was defective in that the attorney who signed the assignment is not an officer of 888 Association, and the address is wrong. And by the way,
were those arguments all raised in the trial court?
No, they were not, but the trial court entered summary judgment.
Does that mean you didn't have a chance to raise those arguments in the trial court?
I wasn't in the trial court, but those arguments might have been better articulated in the trial court. The assignment said that there was an assignment agreement with each assignment, said that it was subject to the existing litigation. And this incorrect address appears not to have been inconsequential, because after the settlement and dismissal of the prior litigation, 888 Association redid it. They did an amended assignment and assignment agreement in which they corrected the address that they didn't. They put in another wrong address, and that assignment and assignment agreement also was subject to the litigation in the prior litigation.
Both assignments, there was a correct legal description, correct?
The legal description, I believe, is correct. The addresses were wrong. Judge McGahee, in his two written judgments, went back to Judge Madden's summary judgment order and said that he was bound, Judge McGahee was bound by Judge Madden's order. And Judge Madden's order was plain error. The reason it was plain error is that either the assignment was somehow not defective, despite a long list of reasons that I've listed, or it was defective. Probably avoid the double negatives. So if that assignment was proper, if that assignment was effective, then it was subject to all the defenses that Ms. Clemmer had against 888 Association. That was raised in her response to the motion for summary judgment, and that was in the assignment itself, in the assignment agreements. It said this assignment is subject to the prior litigation.
What other defenses did she have?
That the cause of action was split.
Well, okay, now, there was no split cause of action defense even indicated in the trial court, was there?
I don't think that was brought up in the trial court.
Well, then when you say that he was precluded from, or she was precluded from presenting other defenses, which she never made a proffer, she had other defenses, what are we to do about that?
Do justice, I would say, is what should be done. But I think I'm getting a little off track on the argument here. What I'm trying to present to this court is that when Judge Madden entered summary judgment, if the assignment was effective, it came with all the defenses, and Clemmer could assert all the defenses she had against 888 Association against Hunter. And as I said, raised in her response to the motion for summary judgment, and that was also included in the assignment agreement, that it was subject to the prior litigation. That would be all the water damage and mold defenses.
Is that language in the assignment agreement subject to the prior litigation?
I think it says, you know, I believe that's what it says. It's in the assignment agreement, not the assignment itself, I believe. And Clemmer had all those defenses to the mold and the water defenses against Hunter, but Judge Madden, in his order, said the only thing that's left here is how much money. Do you owe $10? Do you owe $9? And that's part of the reason why a split cause of action should not be allowed, because Clemmer would then be in the position of having to twice litigate or to come back and represent the defenses to the mold and water litigation. I know that's not exactly how it went in this case, but
I still have two questions. Yes. One, were the mold and the water and all that, were those asserted as defenses in the motion for in opposing the motion for summary judgment?
I don't believe that they were, but I think.
And how could the court have possibly ruled on those if they weren't raised before the trial court?
Because Clemmer asserted that that Hunter was subject to all the defenses against 888
but Clemmer did not assert what those defenses are. She just asserted that there are some defenses out there that would be applicable.
She asserted that Hunter took the assignment subject that had nothing more than what 888 Association had, and took the assignment subject to all the defenses which Clemmer might have against 888 Association.
Wasn't the only defense that she actually asserted was that claim had been settled? That claim was actually settled.
She did assert that defense. And now we're on the.
Was there other defenses asserted?
Excuse me?
Were there other defenses asserted?
There were not other specific. I think in the. Perhaps in the answer there were, but. We're now kind of on the other side of this argument. We're saying, if you're asking what defenses are there to the assignment, the defenses to the assignment are that this cause of action was split, which is not allowed. It's barred by the dismissal of the prior litigation by res judicata claim. Preclusion, and by the lack of notice. What strikes me here in this case is no one, the attorney who signed the assignment was the same attorney litigating the case and never disclosed it. 6 disclosures in the prior litigation, never mentioned this important fact that this claim had been assigned, and never provided copies of the assignment and the assignment agreement.
When you say that it had never been disclosed, wasn't there evidence at trial produced that Ms. Clemmer knew about the lien, and wasn't there evidence produced that the attorneys, one for Ms. Clemmer, had talked with the attorney, I believe, for the association about the lien, and that she would have to deal with someone else about that?
I think that what I took from looking at the transcript is that lien did not come up. The fact that there had been some amount, the $10,000 had been paid, that I think that Ms. Clemmer became aware of that over time. It seems very clear now in hindsight. I don't think it was so clear at the time what was going on.
What about the attorney's testimony that communicated with Clemmer's attorney about dealing with someone else about the lien?
That I don't know if they use the word lien, but yes, there is that testimony without a doubt. What there is not is in the trial court, in the prior trial court litigation, any disclosure in the 6 written disclosures to the court and to Ms. Clemmer that this assignment had been made. And you can't split a cause of action without notice and without the consent of the party and of the court. I'd like to reserve, if there's other questions, I'll answer them now. Otherwise, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time.
Okay. Yeah, 5 minutes and 14 seconds.
Good morning, may it please the court. Dave Walker on behalf of Margie Hunter. With me at council's table is Neil Dunning from my firm and Jonah Hunt, who will argue on behalf of the association. Mr. Hunt and I have agreed to split our time 50-50, so I'll try to wrap up my portion on behalf of Margie Hunter in about 7.5 minutes. This case is really about nothing more than Ms. Klimmer's refusal to pay assessments that she agreed to pay when she purchased her condo. As the court has noticed from both the record and the pleadings, there really are not many factual disputes. Klimmer, by her own testimony and documents that she herself prepared, admitted that she knew she owed the assessments to Hunter. She admitted that she knew that when she settled the prior litigation with the Homeowners Association.
Why couldn't she assert the mold and water damage against Hunter as a limitation or mitigation on her damages?
It simply wasn't raised in this action.
You agree in principle that that argument was available because Ms. Hunter took subject to whatever defenses could have been raised against the assignor.
You know, to the extent that those were not covered by the settlement agreement in the case that was dismissed with prejudice, I would agree.
What does that mean, to the extent that was not covered by the settlement agreement?
If her defense, based on the mold and her counterclaims that were raised in the prior litigation, are you asking?
I'm asking, do you think it was settled in the prior litigation?
I think it was.
Oh, you do? And do you think that someone in privity with someone who sold that assignment should be able to, like, you know, go back on that claim?
I'm not sure I follow your question.
You think that claim was settled and reduced to zero? Then why does Ms. Hunter get a right based on, you know, the prior assignor's position to go back and get that money from her?
I think in principle maybe she could, but that was not raised in this action.
So we're clear, if you accept that premise that Ms. Hunter could have raised those defenses but didn't, so now really we're focusing on the defenses that were raised. And what, in your view, was raised as a defense to your client's assertion of rights?
I think Ms. Klimmer is limited to the two defenses that she listed in the trial management order, and those are that she disputed the amounts that were due and owing, and she asserted that those were resolved by the settlement of the prior litigation.
There were no defenses that she raised going to the basic liability. There were no defenses to liability. The only defenses were to the amount of damages.
Yes, as stated in the trial management order, and that order was submitted prior to summary judgment even being granted.
Well, she did have a defense to liability. That is, that it was settled in the earlier agreement, in the earlier case.
That's correct.
Okay. There were no other defenses that she raised other than the prior settlement in opposing the motion for summary judgment.
There may have been other defenses that were listed in her answer to the complaint, but she had reduced those to those two defenses in the trial management order, and I think she's bound by the trial management order to those two defenses.
And what argument, in your view, is fairly comprised by this assertion that the claim was resolved by the settlement?
Can you say that again?
What arguments, what individual, I mean, the umbrella argument that this claim is resolved by the settlement could embrace many individual arguments, res judicata, for example. This split claim argument.
Right.
What in your view is fairly comprised by that umbrella assertion?
Well, I think she could have argued res judicata, collateral estoppel, the fact that the court entered judgment on a claim that was at issue in a prior litigation, the trial court's factual finding that she knew she settled that amount when she entered into the settlement agreement. I think that precludes any ability to raise that defense in this case.
She plead res judicata or collateral estoppel in her answer?
No.
So she would be barred by Rule 8 from proceeding on those, right?
Correct.
I read the trial court's finding, the trial court's after trial finding as, no, the parties understood this was not encompassed in the settlement agreement. This was a matter not encompassed by the settlement agreement because they all knew that this belonged to someone else.
Correct.
I thought you told me it was resolved in the settlement agreement.
If I did, I misunderstood your question.
Well, that's easy enough to understand.
My apologies. There was an exchange between Judge McGahey and Ms. Klimmer at the trial court that I think makes it very clear that she knew that she had settled with the HOA the amounts that were due and owing, I'm sorry, had settled in the prior litigation the amounts that were due and owing. Judge McGahee asked her directly, before you entered into the settlement agreement, you understood what you just said, that Ms. Hunter had paid $10,000 for a piece of the balance. You understood that. Ms. Klimmer responded, I thought it was Ken McFarland, but anyway, it doesn't matter. Yes. The court followed up, okay, and you knew that piece of the balance belonged to either McFarland or Ms. Hunter at the time you entered into the settlement agreement on the underlying claim, and she responded, that's correct. So I think there's no doubt that there's ample record support for the court's findings that she knew that the amounts due to Hunter, she was still liable to pay. And that's also made clear on her own Exhibit N that she listed the $10,000 line item as due to McFarland for amounts that she knew she was still obligated to pay. As to the claim splitting, the reverse splitting of a cause of action, these are separate claims. The HOA could settle the amounts that were due and owing prior to April 6, 2006 as separate claims to those that arose after April 6, 2006. Those HOA dues accrue on a monthly basis. So it wasn't one fixed claim for a certain amount that the HOA split. Those dues accrue monthly, and in fact, Kiowa in section 316 provides that an association has a statutory lien for any assessment singular levied against that unit, and that the amount of the lien shall include all fees, charges, late charges, attorney fees, fines, and interest. And it further provides that if an assessment is payable in installments, each installment is a lien.
You have to plead each installment as a lien or each installment as a claim?
I think you could assert one claim that includes the amount of monthly assessments in total. In
that one claim, or is that many claims?
Well, I would assert it could be many claims. I think the statute provides that you could have asserted a lien for each monthly due as it accrued.
We don't have the complaint from the prior action in this record, do we?
No.
As of April 6th, which is the date of the settlement, is that right? There was a settlement, so there was no balance at all for past due assessments. Is that correct?
No, I think there was still a balance due that the HOA reserved and then eventually settled with
$9,000.
Yes. I notice I'm at 7.5, so if you don't have any further questions. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Jonah Hunt. I'm appearing on behalf of 888 Condominiums. I'll try not to repeat anything counsel has just discussed, but I think that there is a salient point here that needs to be addressed. That is that the assignment of the lien rights occurred prior to the settlement with Ms. Klimmer and between the association. Once the lien was assigned, simply the chosen action belonged to Ms. Hunter at that point. Ms. Hunter was not a party to the subsequent settlement agreement between 888 and Ms. Klimmer. The settlement agreement that occurred subsequent to the lien assignment settled any personal liability remaining from Ms. Klimmer to the association. So I don't believe that it's a cause of action in splitting as asserted by Ms. Klimmer. And I think that's a salient point.
It seems to me that the cause of actions, if severable, certainly are related in that they were both subject to the same underlying defenses about the water damage and all that.
Correct.
And whether they then should have been allowed to be split, whether they should have been allowed to proceed separately, seems to be something that could be legitimately in the control of the trial court. But I wonder how the court could have ever gotten a handle on this absent notice to the court that this is what was going on.
And I don't think it was ever raised as a defense in the trial court, which is part of the problem. But I think that it's important to note that the settlement occurred after the lien assignment. Ms. Hunter was not a party to the lien assignment. Therefore, she could not be bound by any settlement that the association
well,
may have made.
She could be bound by a settlement by the association if Ms. Klimmer didn't have any notice of the assignment. If she was not notified of the assignment until after the settlement agreement, she could assert, wait a minute, they bargained that claim away, and I can assert any defense the assigner had. Couldn't she?
I agree, but I don't think that that's what the trial court record reflects in this case. There were substantial factual findings that were made. My notes reflect that in summer and fall 2006, both Ms. Clemmer and her attorney were on actual notice of the lien assignment. They tried to negotiate settlement of the lien itself.
Let's talk about the HOA, because that's who you represent, right?
Correct.
Well, why isn't there a duty to indemnify Ms. Clemmer? Because in the agreement, you undertook to settle that claim. Well, even if it's Ms. Hunter's claim and Ms. Clemmer is liable to her, why doesn't the HOA have to indemnify Ms. Clemmer because you undertook to Ms. Clemmer to settle that claim?
Because I think the language of the agreement or the settlement agreement speaks for itself, Your Honor.
Any claim that may exist between the parties, is that clear and unambiguous?
Your Honor, I believe it was unambiguous, but in this case, the trial court, in my opinion, determined it to be ambiguous because they allowed parole evidence. When they allowed parole evidence, I believe that evidence buffered the association's claim that it was Ms. Clemmer that provided the indemnity, not the association. As a matter of course, whenever the association assigns its lien, it's not going to provide indemnity to an investor down the road. As far as the association's concerned, the investor is getting a benefit by taking assignment of this lien. Investors only approach associations for lien assignments when there's equity in the property. They benefit. We draft the assignment. We make sure that the indemnity runs against the investor.
I'm talking about the indemnity duty to Ms. Clemmer. If you purported to settle a claim and that claim pops up later belonging to somebody else to which there's no defense, does not the HOA have a duty to indemnify Ms. Clemmer?
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
And got any authority for that?
I believe that the settlement agreement itself speaks for itself. The language, in my opinion, is clear and unambiguous. In this case, the trial court allowed parole evidence, and I think that the overwhelming weight of the evidence that the court heard made clear that it was Clemmer who was providing the indemnity.
So on that account, your colleague here is relying on the language reduced to zero. What findings did the court make about the meaning of that phrase?
Reduced to zero, how specifically?
Well, isn't that the linguistic basis of your opponent's argument about indemnity? That by agreeing to reduce the account to zero, you necessarily agreed to hold harmless any this settled all the account balances. I mean, so what findings did the court make about the meaning of that language?
The lien assignment was for $10,000. Okay. Ms. Clemmer got a credit on her ledger, which reduced it to roughly $9,500. Subsequent to the lien assignment, the association settled for $3,000 with Ms. Clemmer, which gave her a zero balance on her ledger. But due to the fact that she now had a zero balance ledger, it does not mean that the association extended any indemnity to her. If anything, Ms. Clemmer benefited by getting a $6,500 discount in payment of assessments. And I believe that was reflected in the fact that the prior case was dismissed.
Did your view that the reduced to zero really reflects only the last $9,500 on the ledger?
Exactly, Your Honor. The association had no authority to subsequently settle a claim that had already been pre-assigned to another party.
They had no authority, but did it try to do so, I guess is the question.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
It may have had no authority to do so, but did it try to do so, I think is the ultimate question here.
Did the settlement agreement try to settle the claim that had previously been assigned to
right.
Hunter? I don't believe it had, and even if that was the attempt, I don't believe as a matter of law that's the case.
Our court found pretty much that.
That's my understanding.
So again, what was the court's finding on the meaning of reduced to zero?
I don't know specifically, Your Honor. I didn't try the underlying case. My understanding is that the settlement agreement reduced the ledger balance to zero, but I'm not sure that there were any other findings as far as an association indemnity back to Ms. Clemmer. In fact, I think it was quite the opposite that the trial court found, which is that it was, I thought it was unambiguous, but the court allowed parole evidence and they determined that the indemnity ran from Clemmer to the association. And I believe that was fair finding.
Counsel, did Ms. Clemmer inject the issue of ambiguity into the case?
She did.
Who did?
She did. We moved for summary judgment, we moved to dismiss, and were fought all along and went through an unsuccessful mediation. And Ms. Clemmer was arguing ambiguity. So I have nothing further unless Your Honors have any questions for me.
Thank you, Counsel. Thank
you. Actually, come back. I do have a question. Come back. Let's talk about attorney fees for a minute.
Sure.
And essentially, let's see, the HOA and Ms. Hunter want attorney fees. And I know you can't carry Ms. Hunter's water here, but why should the HOA be entitled to attorney fees when essentially it's Ms. Hunter that appears to be enforcing the HOA lien and not the HOA?
Well, there was, I believe, a judicial admission made in the trial court by Ms. Quimmer's attorney that there was a fee-shifting provision in paragraph 9 of the agreement that stated that the association would be indemnified for costs of defense and attorney's fees. And, Your Honor, I believe that was confessed.
By Ms. Quimmer confessed the attorney fees?
Yes. In a prior pleading, her prior attorney confessed that the fee-shifting provision was a valid, enforceable contract. I also believe that...
And then it applied here against her to entitle the HOA to an award of fees.
Correct. And I believe I have the cite to the record, if you give me just a second. Yeah, CD page 527 and 528, that was Klimmer's response to the association's motion for an award of attorney's fees. Plus, I believe that there's authority under Kiowa, multiple sections for attorney's fees. I
mean, even when they're not trying to enforce the association covenants or declarations?
They were trying to enforce lien rights. They were defending, they were an involuntary litigant in this matter, Your Honor.
They were an involuntary litigant, yes. But they were not pursuing or defending lien rights. They were defending themselves against an indemnity claim.
Well, the provision in the settlement agreement itself, I believe, is a valid, enforceable fee-shifting provision. But if you also read the language of the, I believe it's either the Declaration of Kiowa itself, it can't be read that narrowly, Your Honor. It states that if the association is involved in a foreclosure action, Section 11.6 of the Condominium Declaration, in any such foreclosure, the owner shall be required to pay the costs and expense of such proceeding, the costs and expenses for filing, and so on. I don't believe that the language can be read that narrowly.
You consider the confession to be binding regardless of what the legal rights may have been?
I do, but I believe that under whatever legal theory Your Honors want to consider, both should entitle the association to an award of fees. Thank you.
Bailiff, could you add another 2.5 minutes to Mr. Henning?
Let me start off with the attorney's fees. The association has always argued that they're entitled to attorney's fees for everything, but the attorney's fees provisions for association are not a general attorney's fee clause. It's very, very specific.
Was there a judicial admission in the trial court that they were entitled to attorney fees?
No, I think what Mr. Buchalter said in a response to a motion, one of the post-trial motions regarding attorney's fees, that if attorney's fees were to be awarded, that none of the Kiowa provisions apply, that the only possible way would have been under the settlement agreement, and then I think contested and if I look at the settlement agreement, I look at paragraph 9, you have, first of all, looking at the settlement agreement, the mutual release and settlement agreement, it does terminate the civil action forever, settlement dismissed with prejudice, any and all claims that may exist. And then paragraph 2 has the parties switch where the plaintiffs, referring to Klimmer, and it says that they shall return the account to a zero balance through November 2006. When we get to paragraph 9, we have the defendants, which I can understand how Ms. Klimmer, having been referred to as the plaintiff before, could understand that the defendants would have been 888 Association. In any event, you have the defendants, and you'll notice in the briefs, the either 888, perhaps Hunter, or both, added after defendants that this is Klimmer and and Trinity, which wasn't in this paragraph 9 here, that they declare and represent that no other person has any lien assignment. And what's going on here is, trying to make this clear, is that 888 Association is saying that because Clemmer said that there were no assignments, that it is entitled to indemnification for its own assignment. 888 Association knew it had made an assignment. They allowed Clemmer, in paragraph 9 here, to say that no other person had made an assignment. They didn't step forward and say, wait a second, we made an assignment. And they're now trying to, if Clemmer's saying that no other person, firm, or corporation has received any lien assignment, I think it's fair to say that that came from her, not from 888 Association. 888 Association is trying to argue that we're entitled to indemnification in paragraph 9 from our own lien assignment that we made, because Clemmer represented that there were no lien assignments, and we knew we made one, but we didn't happen to point that out.
Are you asking for us to reform the agreement? Because defendant is clear what defendants mean, doesn't it?
Is it?
Well, we know who the in the beginning it says who defendants are.
Well, no, I understand that.
So but you're asking us to disregard the definition and come up with another term, right?
No, I think what I'm trying to say is that 888 Association should not be allowed to use another party's representation that there were no assignments to protect it from its own assignment. 888 Association made the assignment, and for it to say, because Clemmer said there were no other assignments, we should receive indemnification from our own assignment is unjust.
There was no other prevailing party clause or other fee-shifting language in the settlement agreement?
I think this is it.
Yeah.
And isn't it possible that Clemmer could have assigned her claim?
Oh, yeah, she could, but she didn't.
No, I understand that. But
right.
there would be a reason for that clause to be in there, wouldn't there?
Oh, I think there could be a reason for the clause.
Right.
Water damage, mold damage, mechanics liens. Well, I don't know. I think it's the association that would be hiring mechanics because it's common elements that are being repaired. I suppose it's possible that Clemmer could have assigned one of her claims, but that didn't happen.
Your point is that the paragraph doesn't apply because Clemmer wasn't the assignor of any assignment.
Yes, that's correct.
Wasn't invoked.
Responding to the arguments from Hunter's counsel, they're not separate claims. 888 Association sued for all. The settlement reduced the balance to zero, and the settlement covered any claim that may exist. And looking at 888 Association, what is required for a notice of assignment? What does one have to do? Can one hint? Can one say you need to talk to this person? Or should one actually, in litigation, be required to disclose, which they are and did not? Should one be required to provide a written copy of the actual assignment? I believe it is the latter. That if you're going to provide notice of an assignment, you need to do it in writing, and you need to provide a copy of the assignment and the assignment agreement. That should have been done. It never was done. And Hunter, in her testimony at trial, said, I never wrote to Ms. Clemmer. That never happened. There's implied indemnity that 888, 888 Association is just sort of a sharp practice to say, well, we have a, to not just simply give specific written disclosure of the assignment directly to the parties and within the litigation. There's some other points I'd like to cover very briefly.
Are these points that were raised by either of the
no.
appellees?
No.
I would suggest then you don't have the opportunity to do that if you're not responding to something they said.
I thought I could,
Is this rebuttal time?
No, I thought this was just general talk to the court time, but...
Well, I defer to the presiding judge.
Okay, very well. Let me know.
Go ahead. Complete your comments.
The super priority lien, just very, very briefly. They can't have a super priority lien if Hunter can't. It violates Kiowa and the association reserved the super priority lien to itself. It's right there in the assignments and the assignment agreements. And it was also in the lien stipulation that they that Hunter and 888 Association signed. There's one other thing here. This is an ongoing relationship between Ms. Klemmer and the association. That is why there's the argument for a fiduciary duty or a quasi-fiduciary duty. This is not an arm's-length transaction. I'd ask you to review the matter de novo to the extent possible and to provide a just result. Thank you.
Counsel, just for the next time you're up here, when you reserve time for rebuttal, that means it's to rebut comments made by the other side. If they stand up and say, we rest and don't want to say anything, then you don't have a right to say anything further. But we allowed you to go ahead here. So
I appreciate it. Very well.
All right. Thank you very much, counsel. The matter is deemed submitted, and a decision will be rendered in due course.